Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach. This is Tux Lurzel.
Stephanie Domingo.
We come to you from Bushwick, Brooklyn, where we record on land belonging to the Lenape Nation, a nation that is one of many still very much out here doing its thing, and we would like to acknowledge that.
Yes.
Beyond Reproach is the show about scandals and scandalousness in American politics and government.
Hell yeah.
We be drinking and we be swearing.
Yes.
Today we are drinking a fancy-ass cocktail called a Pisco Punch.
It is very fancy, y'all. Tux brought out chilled glasses like he's the queen.
I'm the queen of Bushwick.
Yes. Yes! Where's your sequin coat?
Yes. Oh, I should put that on for today. I just bought a sequin jacket for no reason.
Because you don't have one. That's the reason.
It came up in a certain, like I was looking, I don't even know what I was looking for, something online, and it was like, oh, I don't have one of those, and I should.
I love that, because it's
And it
true.
Wasn't very expensive, so I'm like, yes, please.
I can't wait to see it in person.
It's right behind, well, the sleeve is sort of poking
out.
Oh, over.
Shit. Oh, it's so good. Why aren't you wearing it?
I know.
It? You'd be hot as hell.
Yeah.
Wow, I can't wait to get my matching one. And then we can go out on the town.
So, in the late 19th century, one cocktail was pretty much synonymous with the city of San Francisco, and that was the Pisco Punch. During the California Gold Rush, San Francisco pretty much exploded with all of these new people coming into California hoping to strike it rich.
Yep.
So with the influx of new immigrants coming into the country from all over the world, especially South America, San Francisco's port was also being flooded with all of these new products from other countries, including a Peruvian clear grape brandy called Pisco.
Oh.
This was at a time when the Panama Canal was not built yet. So trade with Europe and even with the East Coast of America was really, really time consuming and really expensive because things from the East Coast had to come by land.
Yeah.
They couldn't ship them, and stuff from Europe, the same thing. So Pisco was actually cheaper and easier to get than East Coast whiskey or European brandy. So everyone was just drinking Pisco all the time. Bars across the city started serving Pisco, including 19th century San Francisco's most famous bar, the Bank Exchange, which opened in 1854.
Oh, that's perfect for my scandal.
In the 1870s, a Scottish bartender named Duncan Nichols bought the Bank Exchange, and he got so famous for slinging up these Pisco punches that people started referring to him as Pisco John. His name was Duncan.
I
know.
Classic.
Yeah. And
what's your name, Duncan? We're going to call you John.
Pisco John. That's you. And people even started calling the bar, the Bank Exchange, Pisco John's.
Wow.
Yeah.
How weird.
Yeah. The Pisco Punch became so like world famous that one reporter said that you could walk into the lobby of the Hotel Cecil in London and just call out into the lobby, Pisco John. And everybody would turn around and tell you the exact location of the Bank Exchange in San Francisco. Knew exactly where it was.
Wow.
Yeah. Even world travelers like Mark Twain and Rudyard Kipling knew the Pisco Punch and wrote about it, wrote their praises for the Pisco Punch.
Wow. Okay.
In a book from 1948 called This is San Francisco, they said that according to legend, Duncan, or Pisco John, got the recipe from a dying stranger who, quote,
what?
Yes. Okay. Imparted to him the secret formula of a rare punch that went down as lightly as lemonade and came back with the kick of a roped steer.
Okay.
The reality, however, is that...
That's such a weird story.
I know. A dying stranger, yeah.
Remember this drink. This
punch, yeah. The reality is that he probably got the recipe from the previous owners of the bar who he bought it from.
That sounds more likely.
Yes. But this legend persisted because the cocktail was so famous and he was the only person who knew the recipe. He wouldn't share it with anyone. He would make the punch in large batches in the cellar of the bar and send it up in a dumbwaiter so nobody could see him making it.
Is it extremely complicated?
I mean, at the time, I'll get into like how it's made. It is a little complicated.
Duncan, you're doing too much.
I know. When the bar closed in 1920 because of Prohibition, people begged him for the recipe. The newspapers and all of his friends were like, please tell me how to make his Pisco Punch. He was like, nope. It's my secret. I'm not telling you. Prohibition's not going to last. I'll open the bar again, and I want this to remain my secret. Unfortunately, he passed away in 1926 at the age of 72, and he took the recipe with him to the grave.
Wow.
People thought that the Pisco Punch was gone forever. But in 1964, a historian who was researching a book, this book that he was trying to write had absolutely nothing to do with Duncan Nichols or Pisco Punch or the Bank Exchange or anything.
Okay.
He just happened to be researching a book that was on something completely different. And in the process, he accidentally discovered a letter written by the manager of the Bank Exchange, who was working there just before Prohibition. This bar manager had been carefully watching all of the ingredients that were being ordered by Nichols coming into the bar and going to the cellar just before he was going to make the punch. And then one day he secretly spied on him and watched him from, like, I don't know, like behind crates or something.
Yes.
Like, you can't see me, but I'm watching you. And he wrote down all of the steps and the ingredients and how to make this punch. So we can't be absolutely certain that this is exactly the same recipe, but people who had tried the original and tried this bar manager's version say that it tastes exactly like the original.
Okay.
It is made with pisco, as I mentioned, this clear grape brandy from Peru. It also has sugar, lemon, and pineapple juice. But the key ingredient is something called gum arabic, which is an emulsifier that used to be used to prevent sugar syrups from crystallizing. It adds a very sort of silky, smooth mouthfeel to this cocktail and helps to elevate it from basically just like a boozy lemonade to the stuff of legend.
Okay.
What you would do is soak this gum arabic into a sugar syrup. So you're making this gum arabic syrup. And then what Pisco John would do is cut up a bunch of chunks of pineapple and soak it overnight in this gum syrup. And then you would have this gum syrup that was infused with the juice from pineapples, and they would actually use the pieces of pineapple in the punch when they served it. Once you had this pineapple gum syrup, you mix it with lemon juice and pisco. Today, you can still buy gum arabic, and you can make your own pineapple-flavored gum syrup if you really want to make like a large punch, like a punch serving of this. But if you want to make individual cocktails, there are companies you can find online that make pineapple-flavored gum syrup already in a bottle. So it's not hard to find. It's not super expensive. So you will have to buy this pineapple gum syrup, and you'll have to buy pisco because you're probably not going to have that at home. But the only other ingredient is lemon juice.
Oh, easy.
Yeah. So let's take a little sip.
Yeah. Let's cheers.
Cheers. The 19th century San Francisco's most famous cocktail.
When I was a kid at school learning the golden rule, teacher often used to say, if you don't tell a lie, there's not a reason why you can't be like Washington someday. How could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
That's good.
Yeah.
It's so good. You feel how kind of like thick it feels in your mouth?
Yeah.
It's not like gummy. It's just sort of velvety.
Pisco's interesting. It's really
it's like
nice.
A pineapple boozy lemonade.
Very interesting. I love it.
Goes down as lightly as lemonade and came back with the kick of a roped steer. That's that spicy heat that you're feeling.
That dead man was right. You know? I'm glad he shared this cocktail with us.
Yes.
With the dying world. Breath. Like, what a fantastical story. I need this cocktail in my life. I definitely order this at a bar. So my story is in honor of National American Indian Heritage Month.
Oh.
Yeah, I wanted to highlight a story that centered Indigenous people. Because we have this land acknowledgement up top, but we should really be trying, and this is something that I'm actively doing, just trying to unlearn all of the like American propaganda that I was, you know, just absorbed from the culture, masquerading as history by just really looking into Indigenous stories. So my story is about California.
Yikes.
Yeah. Do you know?
Oh, well, I know enough about what was going on in California in the 1800s to know that this is not going to be a happy story.
This is not, and it involves Native people.
Yeah.
So it's not going to, of this era too, it's not going to be a happy story. So in the before times, I used to travel a lot, but I still have not been to California.
Mm.
I've only flown through Seattle twice, I guess, going to Alaska. So I don't know a lot about California.
Seattle's not in California.
I know, but it's on the West Coast.
Yeah,
that's the closest I've been to California.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. All I know is that they have the greatest boobs around.
The boobs in California are the greatest boobs around.
That's what I hear. People have been singing. A person has been singing its praises.
I wonder if anyone is going to get this reference.
I hope so. People know about Kimmy Schmidt. And no, if you don't know,
you're wrong.
Yeah. You're wrong.
If you don't know, now you know.
There you go. If you don't know, now you know. So I'm not alone in knowing very little about the state because its real history has not been told very widely because it's pretty dark. So my skin of this episode is the genocide of Native Californians. By Native Californians, I of course mean the indigenous people on Turtle Island in the area that we know as California. Mm. It's a big state, and this is a really big scandal, so I'm just going to jump right in. So Native Californians are still the biggest and most diverse group of Native people in the country today.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, even though they were targeted for extermination during the first 3 decades of statehood. Mm-hmm. I hear Brad in my head being like, what about the Spanish? Talk about the Spanish. The Spanish did a lot of damage to indigenous populations, but we're not Spanish, so we're not talking about Spanish.
Yeah.
It's not this podcast. So it wasn't just the pioneering spirit gone wrong either. This was something else entirely. Mm-hmm. I know that that's kind of the vibe of what I learned in school, that there was, you know, conflict with Native tribes. There were bad people on both sides. Wink, wink. So this genocide is different because unlike things like the Holocaust or, you know, what's happening in Rohingya, this was not directed by a national government. Yeah. This was done by ordinary white citizens, mm-hmm. just taking the power into their own hands. And yeah, it's bad. Mm-hmm. So these are like good Christian folk within a system that operated more like a homeowners association than an actual state.
Wow. Okay. Because this would have been like territory at this point.
No, this is a state.
Oh, okay. Fuck. Okay.
This is a state. Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah. So first the toast. Let us raise our glasses to the real Golden State killers.
Ooh.
Yes. And the fact that they fucking failed to exterminate Native people's dignity, culture, spirituality, spirit, language, etc. They fucking tried it and they failed. Cheers.
Cheers.
Most of my information came from 2 books, Benjamin Madley's An American Genocide and Brendan Lindsay's Murder State. Both of these men are historians in California, and because of that, they have these titles are just the first part of the title, like before the semicolon. I don't know if you've read like books by historians. The titles are so fucking long.
Yeah.
And then there's like dates and brackets. Like, you don't need all that. You don't need all that. I'm going to put all the information in the show notes. But both men have compiled like all of the receipts. Mm-hmm. All of the receipts for your reading displeasure taken from primary sources, because people at the time weren't shy about what they were doing. It was done in the open. They were bragging about it. They didn't have like Reddit or Facebook, but it was like their water cooler kind of conversation, unfortunately. So the genocide that they were doing was not a secret. It was openly celebrated by newspapers, openly encouraged, too, by everyone. And as you will learn, it was very, very lucrative.
Oh, I'm sure.
This was like their side hustle. So the story of Native Californians began at least 10,000 years ago when the first people settled the West Coast. You know, they came down through like Bering Strait era. In 10,000 years, like, it's, what does that even mean?
I know,
it's such a long period of time. So I looked up, I'm like, when were the pyramids built?
Yeah.
For just perspective, they were built 4,500 years ago. So it's like 2 pyramids and then some.
Yeah.
And compare and contrast that with the oldest structure still standing in California. It's 239 years old.
Jeez.
So it was built yesterday.
Yeah.
Despite this long history, in most textbooks still today in California, indigenous people maybe get a page, maybe get a few paragraphs.
Because we don't want to highlight the negative things that we've done.
Yeah. Before the arrival of the Spanish came in the late 1700s, there were about 300,000 Native people throughout California.
Okay.
So California, like we said, is a really big state. 300,000 people in the whole area of the state is really, it's not very densely populated.
Yeah, totally.
So because of this, tribes in California, they didn't really have contact with any other tribes outside of the state.
Uh-huh.
As a result, they didn't know what was coming towards them.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
They were the last to be contacted by like American settlers.
Mm-hmm.
So these settlers pushing west were not great people. They were really fearful and just filled with the murderous contempt of Native people that was popular back then.
Yeah.
Everyone kind of felt this way, or at least most people.
Yeah.
Didn't really have any compassion for indigenous people. And it didn't matter that going west, they were more likely to die of disease or starvation than being like, you know, given the business by Native people.
Yeah.
Most of them arrived safely. That didn't matter. I read this article that was reviewing, I forget which book, but this person was likening it to a dog that barks at a mail carrier and thinks that like its bark is what's keeping the mail carrier from like not attacking it or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Like these settlers, even though their lived experience ran contrary to the fact that they could meet Native people and Native people weren't trying to kill them.
Yeah.
They still held on to these like really negative views.
Sure.
It was so deeply ingrained in the culture. I don't want to go into a lot of detail about the Mexican-American War. This is just, I want to lay a foundation before I really get into what happened in California. Do you know anything about the Mexican-American War?
I know a little bit. I feel like I want to do a story about it at some point, or one of us needs to do a story.
Yeah. For the purpose of this scandal, you just need to know that the Mexican-American War was started over the expansion of slavery.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So a few years before California became a state, Texas entered the Union as a slave state.
Okay.
So there was hope amongst many that California would do the same.
Sure, yes.
So let's get into the state. California entered the Union in 1850, 2 years after gold was found in them thar hills.
Uh-huh, okay.
And that's not a coincidence.
Yeah.
In the early days of the gold rush, white miners banded together and formed vigilante gangs that would go around terrorizing non-white people who were just existing in the mining areas. So when California became a state, a lot of Mexican people decided to become American citizens. I don't know if you know that, but it made sense. It's like, you're already living here.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, where this are you going to go?
I'm not going to leave just because this is technically a different country now. It's still home.
Exactly. So I think it's around 80% of Mexican people in California just decided to stay.
Yeah.
Because they were kind of bamboozled into thinking that, oh, you'll be just like us.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't.
No, no.
Yeah. They became second-class citizens in their own country.
Yeah.
So these vigilante gangs were going around and, you know, pushing them off their territory, pushing them and the Chinese immigrants who were also in these mining areas. I did a whole scandal, Wong Kim Ark, look it up. I talk about Chinese immigrants in the country around this time and how they fared. So these gangs kind of morphed into political groups.
Okay.
Because even though the state had just become a state, they wanted to be represented.
Yeah.
They wanted their viewpoint to be reflected in the legislature. So they were picking people who echoed their sentiments, negative sentiments against natives.
I mean, that mirrors so many stories about so many areas that have been settled by, I mean, Hawaii to, you know, picking white voices over native ones to make sure that we got what we wanted.
Yeah. So this is a quote from Lindsay's book. He's the one who wrote Murder State. "The only way we will be able to mine in security is if all these people are exterminated."
Mm-hmm.
Like all of them, girl?
And are they? All? Were they actually doing anything to stop anyone from? They didn't care about that gold.
No, they didn't give a fuck about the gold, which is just makes it all so tragic, even more tragic. So Lindsay, he argues that the whole state of California kind of came into being in order to destroy Native communities, which is a pretty strong statement. He does have a lot of research to back it up. And I was looking online and a lot of other historians are saying like, ooh, slow down, dude. That's a big statement.
Yeah.
We just kind of need to dig up more research
sure.
to support it. But I guess everyone can be the judge. For one, California's first governor was on some bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
He was bad. His name was Peter Burnett, and he said that a war of extermination will continue to be waged between the two races until the Indian race becomes extinct.
Jesus.
Yeah. The year he got into office, the California legislature, they passed this act called the Act for the Government and Protection of Indians.
Protection of Indians. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Sure, Jan.
It's a really fucking cynical name.
Mm-hmm.
Because this act made Native American slavery legal.
Mm-hmm.
This law created vagrancy laws that provided the foundation of the 13th Amendment, meaning that you were free unless you committed a crime.
Uh-huh.
So, hey, let's criminalize like just being Native.
Yeah.
Let's call it vagrancy if this person isn't working for you for free.
Yeah, if they're just existing somewhere outside without...
working for a white person.
Yeah.
Yes, they're vagrant. They're criminals.
Mm-hmm.
So this law institutionalized an existing system of unfree Indian labor that had been going on for a while, but it just made it even worse.
Yeah.
Because now, I mean, the labor was already being exploited, but it just got so much worse after this.
Sure.
This law is what led to a lot of kidnapping of indigenous children because both parents had to be employed. Uh-huh. So if the mother is just home taking care, or the father is home taking care of a child and like caught taking care of a child, that person was vagrant, considered
even
vagrant.
The mothers too. Mm-hmm. Wow.
A lot of children were snatched because of this.
Uh-huh.
A lot of families were able to run and hide, but yeah, it was garbage.
Oh my God. This is part of what led to those schools, right? The
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to talk about the schools at all?
No, yeah. That's too big.
Yeah. Hashtag history does an episode on Native American boarding
residential schools.
Residential schools. Okay. Yeah.
This story, I learned a lot. Like a lot of things started with what happened in California.
Yeah.
A lot of things that are still kind of going on today, unfortunately, started in California. So this law also made sure that after the gold rush, there was an economy based on agriculture in the South.
Okay.
Because these white settlers, they went into areas that were known back then as cow counties.
Okay.
In the South. And they just pretty much put themselves into the existing system of ranching and farming that was happening in that area. Because Native people were starting to kind of farm in Southern California, and also Mexican people were farming.
Okay.
But like, when white settlers arrived, they're just like, this is ours now.
Yeah.
They decided to make use of Indian labor now that there's this law that says that they have to be working.
Jesus. Okay. Yeah.
So California on paper was not a slave state, but in practice,
yeah,
it 1000% was, just not for Africans.
I see. Okay.
But the real gold rush was land, also murder. But yeah. I'm going to talk about the land first. So the government gave away public land to the sturdiest of settlers.
Not shocking.
Yeah. They did make them pay. It was a small amount. It was $1.25 an acre, which was...
That's significant back then.
Yeah. It was something.
Yeah.
It was something. Veterans, I took this out of my scandal, but veterans of the Mexican-American War, they were given 160 acres of land for their service.
Okay.
Again, if you were white,
sure,
you would get
of
that
because
there were, you know, everyone was kind of in that fight. These new immigrants, they use the state laws and their land rights to place themselves in really close proximity to Native people.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of surrounded them. They prevented them from hunting, from gathering, from trading with other Native tribes. So it kind of started this cycle of Native communities beginning to starve. And then eventually someone would steal cattle or a chicken because they were fucking starving. And then there would be this overblown reaction where the settlers would say, like, this is why we need law and order. This is why they all need to go, because they're all thieves.
Uh-huh. Setting them up essentially on purpose.
Yes.
Like, we're going to have to create a system where you have to steal to survive.
Yes.
And we know that.
Mm-hmm. So the Marysville Evening Herald, some shitty rag at the time, the failing Marysville Evening Herald, wrote in 1853 that extermination is no longer even a question of time. The time has already arrived. The work has been commenced. And let the first white man who says treaty or peace be regarded as a traitor and a coward.
Jesus. Okay.
That was the vibe. Like, Yeah. What?
Wow. Okay. Good times.
Yeah.
Good
so times. I'm going to have a sip after that.
Yes. Loosen those jaw gums.
I swear every time I do these native scandals, you just look at me with such sad eyes. I'm like, get me out of here. This is payback for all the South Pacific sadness
yes.
that you put me through. So many of these massacres of Indian villages that would happen after something was stolen, after these massacres that were carried out by volunteers, who no one asked, these volunteers organized themselves into different militias.
Okay, yeah.
They gave themselves really stupid-ass names. There's so much documentation about this.
Yeah.
And all the names are so stupid, like Eel River Bandits. And okay. It's like, are you guys five?
Yes, they are, yes.
I was going to read through them, but they're so, it's just, it's really depressing and it's not fun. So just know that all the names are stupid, you guys. So these volunteers, they didn't just kill men. They killed women and children.
Okay.
They killed everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It was extermination. I found a report from an army lieutenant, a man named Edward Dillon. He reported to his supervisors in 1859 that he had received intelligence that during a two-week expedition led by a man named Hall, just a regular man, and other private citizens, some 240 Indians were killed.
Good Lord.
During 2 weeks, just like Hal and his buddies. When this Hal dude was found, because he wasn't in hiding, he told the army that we took one boy into the valley and the infants were put out of their misery. And a girl of 10 years of age was killed for her stubbornness.
Put out of their misery. Were they in misery before you showed up?
The answer is no. They were living their lives happily as infants. The hunting of Indian people was extremely profitable. It was profitable because private citizens, they asked their local governments to tax them in order to reimburse these volunteers.
What?
Yes. The citizens of Uniontown in Eureka voted for a tax to fund these roving death squads. That's how much murderous hate is in their heart, that they're willing to be taxed.
Yeah.
Do you know how these people feel about taxation? Uh-huh.
Yes.
That they want increased taxation just so they can kill Native American people in the area. When I read that, I'm just like, wow, I can't. That's,
yeah.
Again, the hunting of Indian people was really, really profitable. Men who brought evidence of their kill, usually in the form of body parts, scalps, ears, heads. You could bring in the whole body. There were different prices for men versus women versus children. Real psycho killer shit.
What the fuck?
Yeah. You can bring this to your local, like, sheriff. Like, here's my bag of heads. And be reimbursed. So, speaking of psycho, it has recently come to my attention that I used to have read receipts on my text messages. You guys, Tux told me this like 2.5 weeks ago, and every day I think about it. Every day I just wonder how many other people saw read receipts and did nothing.
I have been seeing them for a long while and just thought, she has to know.
No. Why,
how would you not know?
So I got a new phone, and apparently there was some weird glitch because my read receipts were not on.
Yeah.
I had to toggle them on and then off for you not to see them.
That's so weird.
I can't believe you didn't tell me.
I mean, I did eventually, but...
There's
a show called Q-Force on Netflix where they say something about how, like, I knew that person was a psycho because they had their red receipts on. But I was like, oh yeah, like Stephanie, it's because you're the only person I know.
And then he said this to me via text and I was just like...
Wait,
my eyes were those, like, two big eyes, like... I couldn't believe
like,
it.
Like, who, me?
I'm still not okay with it. I really think on my deathbed, I'm going to be like, there was a large chunk of time when I had my red receipts on and nobody fucking told me. And I feel betrayed, but I'm working through it.
I should have said something earlier, but I was like, there's probably just a reason. I don't know what it is, but I'm just going to let it slide.
You're like your grandmother who's just like,
that's none of my business. Yeah. If that's how she wants to live her life, that's none of my business.
I mean, that's such an old lady, like, like a mood.
Uh-huh.
And I love it. I applaud it. And I hope to rise to that level one day where I'm just like, it's none of my business.
Yeah, except my grandma's also like talking to me about how you have your red receipts on, but that's none of my business.
Oh yeah, you know? That's right, because you're like her intermediary,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's, yeah, again, old woman behavior right there. Grown woman shit.
Grown ass woman shit.
One day I will be there with you ladies. Okay, back to the death squads. So the legislator, you're like, let's talk about how I betrayed Stephanie some more. I'm joking, kind of. I just...
Kind of.
But just think, if your read receipts were on and yeah. I didn't tell you...
Yeah, I would be like, what the fuck, Stephanie? Yeah. Clearly, that's your business yes. to tell me.
So the California legislature, they approved $1.29 million to reimburse these private citizens.
In like 18, what, 60s money?
1850s money. 1.29, which is $45
million. $45
million. In today's money, uh-huh. yeah. To reimburse these murder for hire services. They're like expense reports. This bill was passed on to Congress, who fully funded this endeavor. So mass murder was legalized and publicly subsidized.
Good Lord.
Yeah. And yet we can have healthcare. So because of this this injection of cash into California, it was the next gold rush, just killing Native Americans.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because people were, I don't want to get into it, but a lot of people were exaggerating their funds. Let's yeah. just leave it at that.
Okay.
Yeah. So I found a lot of, I actually went to the library for this.
Oh, wow.
Because these two books, they're available in the part of the research library, the New York Public Library.
Okay. You can't take them out.
You can't take them out.
Okay.
So I felt like a fancy research man.
Yes.
I went in there with my like spectacles. I was wearing a blazer with patches at the elbow.
You have a pocket protector.
Obviously. I'm a research man. but I found a firsthand account that I wanted to share. Just this one because it's a lot. This is a firsthand account of a private citizen turned commando, again, that nobody asked for. So this is the quote. There was a person up in Humboldt County who was found with a small child, a young Indian child. And they ask him, what are you doing with this child? And he says, I'm protecting him. He's an orphan. And they say, well, how do you know he's an orphan? He said, I killed his parents.
No big deal.
No big deal. So now I think it's time for a dance break.
Mm-hmm.
Dance / and or cry break.
I mean, I know this about our history in this country already, but these stories always break me.
They break me too.
Yeah. I feel bad that I've never really explored the history of Native genocide because
so
for the whatever reason, I just don't have it in me.
Of the atrocities is so profound and so well documented yeah. too.
Oof. Okay. Time for another drink.
Yeah.
BRB.
Well, hello there. Do you wish your high school history course had more drinking, more swearing, and more ladies?
Well, do we have the show for you. Her Story on the Rocks is a long-form podcast talking about good women, bad women, fictional women, and non-fictional women from all times and places.
Basically, each week we pair two women who we research with a themed signature cocktail.
You won't be sorry you listened to our latest episode.
Available everywhere you listen to podcasts.
Cheers!
We're back with cocktails, yes. More pisco punches. This is so good.
It is really delicious.
Stephanie got a chance to taste the pisco on its own.
Yeah, so it reminds me of a grappa. I don't know if anyone's familiar with that. It's a grape-based spirit in Italy. It's really, really strong, really high-proof. People have it as like, they call it digestivo after a big meal.
Yeah.
It's supposed to just like aid in digestion, but also it gets you drunk. So
yeah.
it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, they do the same thing in France. It's called eau de vie in France, but they also called it a digestif.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
One is plenty.
Yes.
One is actually too much.
Yeah.
Maybe. After, but yeah, I've definitely been with Italians where we've had two, and I, God. Yeah, one night in Sicily, I was... eating alone, or so I thought.
Yeah.
And this group of women were just like, oh, you can't eat alone. And they like invited me to join their table.
Aww.
And I like ate with them and like we had two grappas. And then the next morning I missed my flight.
Oh no.
From Sicily to Milan.
Oops.
It was a good time, but I didn't need that second grappa.
Yeah.
Okay. So back to Tux's favorite scandal. This was not part of any war. This was just regular citizens killing Native Americans.
Yeah.
This was nothing that was organized by the government. It was a slaughter. Because oftentimes, the amount of non-Natives killed in these quote-unquote conflicts mm-hmm. was zero.
Yeah, because it's totally one-sided. Mm-hmm, it's not. Yeah.
One-sided. Usually they struck at night. They had superior firepower. It wasn't even close. Like, they were shooting people from a distance.
Okay, yeah.
It was a slaughter.
Yeah.
And again, the most common motive, if you can say there's any motive, was the theft of a chicken.
Okay.
You know? It was nothing violent.
Sure.
Like, these Native people weren't just killing American babies in the night.
Yeah, yeah.
They were stealing a chicken because they were hungry.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're at home thinking, what about the treaties? Bless your heart. Just bless all of it. You are cut from a different cloth. What about the treaties?
Yeah, I mean, really, what about the treaties?
Come on, this is America.
We didn't honor treaties.
They drafted them.
Drafted? That's nice.
Yeah.
How thoughtful.
Yes. So the year California became a state, 1850, they negotiated 18 different treaties with local nations. Unfortunately, under pressure from California senators, the Senate voted not to ratify any of the treaties.
Oh.
And they went so far as to hide them from the public.
Uh-huh.
Vote to hide them from the public until 1905.
Jesus. Uh-huh.
So with no ratified treaties, there was no land allotted to these California tribes.
Okay, yeah.
Instead, the government created reservations on federal land, where the indigenous were rounded up and detained.
Mm-hmm.
Many were forced to cross really large rivers. Many indigenous people did not know how to swim
mm-hmm.
because they didn't have to know how to swim. Because sure. when they crossed a river, they crossed it in a boat.
Yeah.
If they crossed at all, most of the time they would just find a shallow part of the river and like cross and sure. not swim. Like, who swims across a river?
Yeah.
They made them swim across rivers. Many people drowned. Many children, women, everyone drowned.
Fucking Lord.
Yeah. They were held in camps with little access to hunting, little access to fishing. They were kind of at the mercy of federal Indian commissioners.
Okay. Yeah.
Who were doing their best, like, Stephen Miller impersonation. I don't know if I've said this on the podcast before. I refer to Stephen Miller as Teenage Mutant Ninja Gerbils. One of the hosts of the Daily Zeitgeist, Miles Gray, he calls Stephen Miller Teenage Mutant Ninja Gerbils. And I just...
Phenomenal.
I will take any opportunity to laugh at that awful man.
Yes.
It's just so fitting.
He looks like young Nosferatu.
Yeah. That's such a you reference. Like the black and white version of
yes.
him. Yeah. Nosferatu. Because Tux is 3,000 years old as well.
Facts are facts, America.
So the first superintendent of Indian Affairs was on some bullshit.
Imagine that.
A man named Edward Beale. I mean, they were all really bad, but the first two were like piles of shit.
Mm.
Upon arrival in 1852, he sent this report back to Washington. Driven from their fishing and hunting grounds, hunted themselves like wild beasts, lassoed and torn from homes made miserable by want, and forced into slavery, the wretched remnant which escaped starvation on one hand and the relentless Americans on the other, only do so to rot and die of a loathsome disease, the penalty of Indian association with frontier civilization. This is not idle declamation. I have seen it, and I know that they perish by the hundreds. I know that they are fading away with a startling and shocking rapidity, but I cannot help them. Bitch, it's your job.
I can't help them.
It's your job. You literally are tasked to help them.
Nobody told him. I didn't know that was my job. I thought I was just supposed to watch.
But I cannot help them. Humanity must yield to necessity. They are not dangerous. Therefore, they must be neglected.
Excuse me, what?
Snitching on himself that he's not doing his job.
They must be neglected. Bitch, you put them in this situation. Yeah. They weren't dangerous before you forced them onto a reservation.
Yeah.
And when they could support themselves.
I feel my body getting hot because Bill was such a piece of shit. And I don't use that word lightly. He was so, so, so bad.
Yeah.
He was so bad that he was eventually fired for mismanagement and fraud. But his replacement, Thomas Henley, was even worse. So in 1855, a U.S. Treasury agent traveled all the way from D.C. to California to investigate how the money that they were sending was being allotted.
Mm-hmm.
Because they kept requesting extra money. And we're just like, oh, is there extra like services being given? Like, let me check. So he wrote that, I'm glad we're both seated. He wrote that private enterprises by the officials were seen on reservations and seemed to make use of native labor, federal funds, and land set aside for the care of native people on the reservation.
What? So they were paying for companies to come in and exploit these
yep.
people as free labor.
Yes. Yes.
And the government was paying yes. them to do this.
Mm-hmm. Paying for these businesses to operate. Thousands of dollars meant for the care of Native people were being used to fund the business of federal employees and white settlers on reservation land. Because there were white people living on the res. Because do you remember when I did that mini about Afro-Indigenous
yes.
people?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right after I did 40 Acres and a Mule. That there was this concept of a $5 Indian.
Yes.
That you could pay your way onto these roles. So white people were living on the reservation and making use of native labor. They were running businesses.
What the fuck yeah. is wrong with us?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
When I read that, I'm just like, you guys are really, you're doing too much. And just so shamelessly doing it. And requesting more money from the government. Like, hey, we've hit some hard times. Send us more money. Many actual Native people on these reservations, they were being slowly starved to death because they weren't able to hunt. And these businesses sometimes were polluting the water supply where they went fishing.
Of course they were.
So they...
The only source of food that they really even had.
So they started to get really sick.
Shocking.
They were malnutritioned. Nutrished.
Nourished.
Thank you. So I guess I can say this. I have recently had COVID. I am fine to record. I am no longer infectious, but I totally still have COVID brain.
Yeah.
I called Jason 2 days ago industrial when I meant industrious.
Amazing.
And he won't let it go. He brought it up again this morning and I'm like, yeah. He's like, you can't blame COVID. I'm like, but you've been saying weird shit too.
Yeah. Amazing.
So yeah, they were malnutritioned. So yeah, they started getting really sick because they weren't getting proper nutrition. They were in close proximity to unwashed legs as well. That's worth noting. That was not in my research.
That has spoiled the water supply right there. People just wading through the water with their unwashed legs.
Gravity was supposed to have them, okay? Gravity was supposed to do all the heavy lifting. So Henley, like his predecessor, was fired for mismanagement and fraud.
Okay.
Yeah.
As he needed, well deserved.
As he needed to be.
Yes.
Because he was terrible.
Thank God I have this delicious cocktail.
Yeah, drink. I'm actually going to take a sip.
I feel like, for whatever reason, we always drink very fruity and tropical flavored cocktails when we're doing the
yes.
most atrocious yeah. stories. I should have known better than to put pineapple in a cocktail because...
You're right. Pineapple it cues genocide.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Every time. But we need this pineapple.
Yes.
So I mentioned earlier that a lot of things started in California.
Yeah.
A lot of things that are still going on today. So have you heard of missing murdered Indigenous women?
Yes. Yeah.
That movement, it started in California.
Okay.
It started on these reservations. Women and children were being sold to local men. We have the receipts. And it's bad. It's really...
It's still happening today. It's going on all over the country.
All over the country, underreported everywhere.
What was the woman that just went missing? I'm completely blanking on her name. Gabby something. The white woman that went missing.
Oh, yeah.
The whole country was in an uproar.
They found her so quickly.
Yeah. Well, she's...
She's dead. But still, the FBI got involved.
Yeah.
The FBI doesn't get involved
in... like, the same county, there's been, like, 400 cases of Native women.
Oh, my God. Of course. Yeah.
And
oh,
nobody's done a fucking thing about it.
They don't get the press. The FBI doesn't step in and say, like, hey, we're going to find whoever did this.
No, they don't care because they're Native. So who gives half a shit?
So despite being fired from their position, both of these men, these Indian commissioners, Beale and Henley, they were given land near the reservation where they continued to use Native American labor to make their fortunes.
After being fired.
Yes.
They're like, hey, don't do that. But also, go ahead.
Don't do it on the res.
Yeah.
But do it near the res. Under California law at the time, Indian people had very little recourse because they weren't allowed to testify against a white person in court.
Mm-hmm.
The criminal code in California prevented it.
They were also not considered citizens at this point, too, right?
Yeah. Yes. And that applied to Chinese people as well, and, you know, black people, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So in the late 1840s, like before settlers started moving out west, there were about 150,000 Native people in California. Within 60 years, 90% of those people 90%. Would be gone. Murdered, disappeared, snatched, being raised as white.
Yeah. Well, that's especially, all the children that were snatched and then raised as white.
Mm-hmm. So Lindsay, he has this quote at the end of the book, because I was just skimming through and like taking pictures of things, where he asks, how did unthinkable acts such as the purposeful murder of infants become thinkable? Thinkable, in fact, to people who valued freedom, had deep faith, loved their own children, and sought to make better lives for themselves and their families. How could otherwise good people commit such heinous atrocities and indeed honor and celebrate those atrocities?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a question that a lot of people have asked.
Yeah.
It's complicated. I don't know if you've... Do you know Hannah Arendt?
No.
She wrote Eichmann in Jerusalem.
Okay, yeah.
Notes on the Banality of Evil.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't finished the book. Actually, before the world fell apart, it was like the last thing I returned to the library. But she asked that same question, like, how did the Holocaust happen? Because she went to Jerusalem and she was there in the courtroom when Eichmann was on trial.
Jesus.
And he was not like... some monstrous person.
Yeah.
He was kind of caught up in a system. He was very dumb.
Okay.
Very unintelligent, who he just like went along and was like trying to get promoted essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's easy to sort of separate things and think of thinking of a community of people as less than.
Yeah.
If your entire system that you're raised into
the whole culture
led you to believe that
tells you that they're not human.
Yeah.
And that this is just what we do.
I mean, that doesn't make it okay.
Absolutely not.
But I understand that, you know, I don't know. It's difficult.
It's difficult. It's very complicated. And like, I kind of hated when I saw this question because I'm just like, who fucking cares?
Yeah.
We know that good people can do bad things. It's circumstantial. But like, why even kind of entertain this thought? But at the same time, he is right to think of it.
These are people. These are people who have families, who have children, who have mothers and grandmothers, and see at the same time that they can see their own grandmothers and their own children, see old women and children drowning crossing a river and not care.
Anything.
Not even care.
Yeah.
What was the Henry Ford episode where you talk about, what was that man's name, where he like, it suddenly dawned on him one day that black people care about their children.
Boyd, I think. Yeah. I think his name is Boyd from Kentucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. It dawned on him after he lost his son tragically that black people care about their children like white people.
Yeah.
He was an old man when he came to this revelation. And when I read that, I'm just like, shouldn't it be obvious that this person's a person, therefore they have all the person things? Like, they care about their kids? Like, why wouldn't you care about your kids? It's just so fundamental.
I don't know. It's, you're thinking of them as less than human, but then you like, you treat your fucking cat better. You know what I mean?
Yes. That's something that's still hard for me because I'm pro animal rights, but all the people, you know, white people who are in the street when, you know, something happens to a lion, yet are silent when there are atrocities committed against black people.
Yeah.
They don't like see.
Yeah. How dare you test makeup on a rat?
But that person shouldn't have been wearing baggy pants.
Right. Yeah. A black hoodie. Oh my God. Clearly they're a criminal.
Clearly. It's very complicated, but he reasons that the two forces that made it so possible for people to commit these horrible atrocities and really think nothing of it was manifest destiny was like one of the ideologies, and also just white supremacy.
Sure, of course.
Yeah. So for people who don't know, manifest destiny is like it's like our God-given right.
It's like one of the few things that I really remember from history class.
Yeah.
It was being taught about manifest destiny, that like this country was destined to expand westward.
Yeah.
It was our God-given right.
So absurd.
And not even right, but like God wanted us to expand westward and make this whole land.
It was God's will.
Yeah, exactly.
God loves when you exterminate brown people, don't you know? So that together with just white supremacy and a culture of dehumanizing non-white bodies made for this guilt-free massacre, where as just regular citizens were taking it upon themselves to kill indigenous people and their families. Mm-hmm. They were able to cut off the heads of babies and drop them off for money and still go home and feel like they were good people.
It's like that. Well, I mean, it's not the same thing, but it's like the story that I did recently about the KKK and how these people saw themselves as good Christians.
Yeah. And they're just like, what? We do bad things?
What are you talking
Since
about?
Since when?
A murderer and a rapist? We could never. No. We don't want to be associated with something like that.
No, we're a force for good. Like, what?
Look around you.
Excuse me? That just tells you how distorted someone's perception can be of their own actions.
Yeah, especially if they're against somebody that doesn't look like you.
Yes, someone who is being dehumanized, someone who is you just have assumed are less than.
Yeah, because they either don't look like you, they don't speak the same language as you, they have a different religion, whatever it is.
They're a Catholic.
I mean, come on, you couldn't possibly. These people, sure, they have white skin, but Jesus Christ, they
follow the Pope?
The
come
Pope?
On.
I could never.
So I'm just going to end with a quote from Lindsay on why he wrote his book. I think it's pretty important. He wrote, "The motive for this book rests upon a very practical foundation. Native Americans in California today are making inroads in matters of health, cultural renewal, sovereignty, and the reclaiming of lost lands and other rights. California voters, teachers, courts, and lawmakers thus continue to make choices that affect Native American people in the state."
Absolutely.
So we need to know our history so we can stop repeating it. And again, there are more indigenous people in California than in any other state by far. It's Absolutely. Not even close.
I did not know that. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Considering that was one of the last states that this policy was like in place. But
and they're still fighting for rights, recognition, and most importantly, land. And it's important that we tell their stories.
Absolutely, yeah.
The end.
Well, thank you for telling that story. As much as I hated every minute of it.
I mean, just imagine researching it.
Oh, yeah, I cannot imagine researching it.
It was really not fun. I, like, turned back so many times, like, I don't need to tell this story.
This is not the one, yeah. No, it's so important for us to know these things, though.
I just gotta do it.
Thank you. Yeah.
I went all the way to the library for this. I gotta do it.
Yeah. If you've listened to that story and feel like you don't know enough about the way this country has treated Native American peoples, please listen to our episode on the Trail of Tears.
Yeah.
Please listen to our episode on Thanksgiving. Please listen to our Hawaii episode.
Yes.
Check out Hashtag History's episode on the Native American boarding schools.
Mm-hmm. And I took this out of my outline. I think it was Gavin Newsom. He did acknowledge that genocide was perpetuated against Native Americans in California.
Duh.
Yeah.
But like,
he said the words.
Yeah, exactly. That means something in today's culture.
And he says that more research needs to be done. But his whole thing was like, we need to more people need to know this.
Absolutely.
We need to put this into the curriculum.
Yeah.
But it's going to take time. I think this was in 2019. He acknowledged it. And yeah, I read his statement and I'm just like, it's so fucking milquetoast, but it's something. But also it's so nothing.
I know. And it's like, it's so you're doing the bare minimum and we give you a pat on the back and you don't really deserve it. But like,
it is better than nothing, but like only slightly.
And it's more than anyone else is doing in a leadership position in government.
Yeah.
More than anyone else is doing. I need more liquor.
Yeah.
And I need a dance. I'm going to put on my sequin jacket.
Yes. And I'm going to dance it out. So Tux put on his sequin jacket and it is magnificent. And I'm going
to get you one.
Yeah, I need to get one.
I need, where am I going to wear a sequin jacket?
Everywhere. Everywhere. What are you talking about?
To the laundromat, to the dog park.
Why do you, we live in Brooklyn.
True.
We can wear it everywhere.
Facts are facts, America.
Come on.
That is true. I can get away with it more in Brooklyn than anywhere else in the world, or at least in the United States.
And be celebrated.
Absolutely.
By me. I'm just following you, being like, woo!
Work!
Yes! Yes! I'm your I have a megaphone.
Yes. Slay! At the dog park.
Yeah.
Picking up poop. Yes.
That was a lot.
Yes. Well, I'm going to suck down the very last of this second Pisco punch.
I love pineapple.
Pineapple.
Even though it's so sweet, I just love it. I love it so much.
It's funny thinking, and this occurred to me like halfway through the story, but the fact that there was even pineapple possible in California in the 1860s and 70s was because we took over Hawaii.
Oh, Hawaii.
And because Hawaii is so close to California, that like if pineapples were being grown.
Right, of course. It's proximity. Yeah.
Like they didn't have pineapples in the 1870s in New York City, or they might have a pineapple.
You talked about pineapples being like a thing just for rich people.
Because it was so hard to get them. Yeah. You would rent pineapples. Yeah. Please listen to our Hawaii episode because the story about pineapples being like they were so hard to get that they were incredibly expensive. It would cost, in today's money, thousands of dollars to buy a pineapple. So people would rent them from parties just to like put them on the table and be like, look at me, I'm fancy. I have a pineapple. Good times. Okay. Thanks, guys. So my drink is officially empty.
Yeah, mine is getting there.
America's history is juicy. We just add Pisco, some Peruvian grape brandy that is, you know,
high proof and delicious.
We just add this Pisco and some pineapple gum syrup and lemon. Thank you so much for listening to Beyond Reproach. This has been Tux Lerzel.
Stephanie Domingo eating a pineapple.
Mouthful of pineapple, I'm sorry. Thank you to Tim Clough, our editor, our sound engineer, and podfather. We could not do this without you. And a special thanks to Mr. Dole.
Oh, yeah.
For stealing native land in Hawaii so we can eat this delicious pineapple.
Four middle fingers up.
Yes.
For Mr. Dole.
Fuck you, but also pineapple is delicious.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Bye. Bye. And I'm sorry.
Beyond Reproach is proudly recorded in Bushwick, Brooklyn, on land belonging to the Lenape Nation. Please note that we are not historians. We're just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. A full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. And remember that written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Don't forget to follow us on social media, and make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop at beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves, and we have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.